Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. The time is now 6:03 p.m. on the East Coast, 3:03 p.m. on the West Coast. Today is 2/24/2024. Interesting combination of numbers. February 24th, 2024. Welcome to the TMGS. It's the Michael Gay Show on the TMG and the Michael Gay Network. I'm your host, Michael Gay, and happy Saturday, everybody. Hope that you had a great afternoon as evening comes upon us here in the A in Atlanta, Georgia. And a little chilly, a little cool out here, but that's the South. One day it'll be 44 degrees and the next day it'll be 74 degrees. You never can tell here in Georgia. All right, so today we have some very interesting topics to talk about. Of course, we're going to go a little political rundown because it's kind of comical to me that all this talk about, well, this president, this guy, he's so old, this guy. They're both old, you guys, okay? And they both had their little issues, you know, this and that. But what Donald Trump did this week, I'm a little bit afraid of whoever gets in there now, okay? I'm not sure. You know, is it a law that you got to be old to be a president? We know that Barack Obama was young. We know Kennedy was young. But, you know, what's going on, you guys? What's going on? Well, maybe I can get some help about what's going on with that once I open up the mic to my co-host here. The one, the only, Miss Janet Pollock Hawkins Davis. Hey, Janet, how you doing?
Hey, Michael. How are you tonight, this evening?
I'm doing well. Doing well. Yeah, I saw that clip of former President Trump. And by the way, we're going to get into that whole thing. That here's another indictment. But fill us in on that. What was the event he was at? He was at some kind of conference type thing. It's the Black Republicans, I believe, right? And said something about you know, that's why Black people love him and like him and everything. And I'm like, Mason.
Well, first of all, he made him. Is it okay if I say something?
Yes, it's okay. You say something.
All right. Well, first of all, he mentioned how bright it was in the room and he couldn't even see anybody. But then he made the statement that, oh, he could see Black people. And then he tried to act like he was being persecuted just like the Blacks were being persecuted, you know. And, you know, all the bottom line is he wants votes. And you're not going to get them from Black people trying to act like you their buddy, 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 when we all know you weren't a buddy before.
Mm-hmm.
So he made that comical statement, and a lot of people I know didn't like it because, you know, he was acting like we're being persecuted, so he's being persecuted, you know. And so I don't know. It was just too much for me.
Well, what I read was interesting too is that where he did a rally elsewhere earlier in the day. And by the way, he did reference to Martin Luther King at the Black rally, but then at the majority white rally, he used someone else, you know, but pretty much in the same context, you know, of what he's trying
just
to
say. Changing the color. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So really interesting. Now, what is this of this new indictment now?
I beg your pardon?
I said, what is it with the new indictment? He just recently got indicted again. Correct?
Well, I don't really know about him being indicted again, but I'm going to sure look it up. I know that he was supposed to pay a certain amount of money by a certain time frame. I know he didn't pay that money yet, and so it has come. It's like the chickens come home to roost. He was trying to get the Supreme Court to weigh in on that, but when the judge in New York gave him so many days that he was supposed to come up with that money, regardless of whether he's appealing, you know, so I don't know if that's the indictment, but Michael, I'll let you know in a few minutes because I'm getting ready to check.
Okay. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I could have sworn I saw it. I hadn't had much time to really look at that, everything that's come across the screen, but I'm going to look at some of these things that you have sent me to that we're going to talk about. But, yeah, if I heard correctly, it's another indictment.
Yeah, I didn't see that when I was checking breaking news, but I'll check again.
Okay. Let me look at something else here. Now, I did read an article, too, that if Donald Trump is reelected, that Jared says, no way, I ain't a new once was enough for me. I am not going to be part of this administration. But he so kindly said that, you know, the first time around, it was a lot of people that were not, you know, really of any with much experience or, you know, that really made that administration, you know, not the best that it could have been. But isn't this the same president who said that he was going to pick the best people? That's what really threw me. He was going to pick the best of the best. And you
best
look at it, it, yeah, and it didn't turn out that way.
I'm looking up the civil fraud judgment. That's the one that's $450 million, and it's climbing. So that's the only thing that I see, Michael, is what I talked about earlier, where it started out at $355 million, and they said with interest of 9%, and now, you know, he had so many days that he had to come up with that money, regardless of whether he's appealing it or not. You know, he says he got the money, so hey.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let me just run across this article real quick here, what we're talking about. It says, Trump says indictments and his mugshot are helping him with black voters. In a speech to the Black Conservative Federation, former President Donald Trump made express overtures to black voters whom he and his campaign are eager to win over. Well, anybody's eager to win the black vote, I guess. Let's see. What I do? Okay. In a speech to, okay, I already said that part. All right. Quote, I think that's why the black people are so much on my side now, end quote.
Mm-hmm.
Trump said at a gala hosted by the Black Conservative Federation in Columbia, South Carolina, quote, because they see what's happening to me happens to them. Does that make sense? At another point in his speech, he suggested that black voters had warmed to him, quote, because they have been hurt so badly and discriminated against, and they actually view me as, one moment, view me as I'm being discriminated against. It's been pretty amazing. Mr. Trump has long used law and order to rally his conservative base, as well as coded racist language to attack political opponents. His comments on Friday came in a speech filled with express overtures to black voters, a group that has overwhelmingly voted Democratic for decades, but whose support he and his campaign are eager to win. As the former president has shifted his focus from the Republican primary, where he is the dominant front runner, to the general election, he has increasingly included mentions of black voters in his speeches. Typically, Mr. Trump claims that black Americans fared better economically under his administration than under President Biden. He has also asserted that the influx of migrants at the southern border is disproportionately hurting black voters who face the threat of losing their jobs to immigrants willing to work for lower wages. But Friday's speech saw Mr. Trump tailor his remarks specifically to black voters. In particular, he married one of the central grievances animating his campaign, that the 91 felony counts he faces are the work of politically motivated prosecutors and an unfair justice system with a race-based appeal. At one point, Mr. Trump brought up the mugshot that was taken of him last August when he was indicted in Georgia on charges tied to his efforts to overturn his 2020 election loss in that state. The Trump campaign has used the photo in fundraising efforts and has plastered it on apparel, as have a number of independent vendors whom across the political spectrum. Mr. Trump noted that black people had been wearing shirts with his booking photo. Quote, you know who embraced it more than anybody else, Mr. Trump asked the crowd, the black population. Mr. Trump also spoke extensively about his signature criminal justice reform law, the First Step Act, and he rarely mentioned that law, which, among other things, sought to reduce mandatory minimum sentences for some crimes while campaigning to the predominantly white crowds in Iowa and New Hampshire. Mr. Trump has long been accused of racist remarks and behavior. The Justice Department sued him in 1977 for discriminating against potential black tenants. He was criticized for fueling racial tension when he took out newspaper ads in New York in the 1983, urging the state to adopt the death penalty after the rape of a jogger in Central Park, a crime wrongly blamed on five black and Latino teenagers. And he first emerged as a conservative political figure when he stoked animus toward President Barack Obama by becoming a high-profile figurehead of the so-called birther movement, which falsely cast doubt on whether Mr. Obama was born in the United States. Mr. Trump continues to emphasize Mr. Obama's middle name, Hussein, when he refers to him on the campaign trail. And he has continued to question whether political opponents who are people of color are eligible to hold office. Most recently, Nikki Haley, his long remaining rival for the Republican presidential nomination. But Mr. Trump often heralds his improved standing among black voters on the trail. He won just 8% of black voters nationally in 2020 and 6% in 2016. The polls have shown him with increased support, particularly in crucial battleground states. During Friday's speech, as he was thanking supporters and friends in the crowd, a typical feature of Mr. Trump's campaign speeches, he noted that he was having trouble spotting them. That's the part you were talking about. Quote, the lights are so bright in my eyes that I can't see too many people out there, Mr. Trump said, to laughs from the audience. But I can only see the black ones. I can't see any white ones, you see. That's how far I've come, he added as the crowd cheered. That's how far I've come. That's a long way, isn't it? He also took aim at identity politics, even as he repeatedly tried to cater to black voters, while telling a story about negotiating the price of an overhaul for Air Force One. Mr. Trump criticized Mr. Obama for not doing enough to cut costs. Would you rather have the black president or the white president who got $1.7 billion off the price? Mr. Trump asked the crowd, which cheered in response. Well, that's interesting. That's pretty interesting.
Well, the thing is, Obama was in office for 8 years. And when you look at the deficit with Obama compared to Trump's 4 years, there's no comparison. You know, Trump outspent a lot of presidents.
Yeah. But what I find interesting, too, is just that part where he says, that's how far I've come. That's a long pause. That's a long way, isn't it? From where?
Yeah.
From what was already.
And was there a black crowd? I didn't see the people. You just saw him talking, from what I saw, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if he was who he was really, you know, doing a speech with. I really don't know.
Who was he speaking to, right? Yeah.
I know there was a lot of criticism behind it.
Interesting. Very interesting as we come up to now next month. What's his name? What is his name? His right hand man. That also was indicted. I see his face, but I can't think. McCarthy. McCarthy goes to court next month, right? Doesn't that start in March? You there? Hello? Okay, I can't hear Janet. Okay. I don't know what happened. Janet, you there? Okay. Okay, so from what I understand, I believe McCarthy goes to Kevin McCarthy. Yeah, I believe that's it. No, it's not McCarthy. It's what is his name? I can't think of his name. I see his face. I'll have to pull it up. But I'm trying to pull it up. You guys bear with me. Okay, that's not it. Let me see if I can pull it up this way. Right, I'll have to come back to that. Okay, Georgia, okay. I'm sorry, you guys, I'm having an issue trying to locate this information. I'm trying to get right here real quick, and then I will be able to see the listing. Okay. I see Janet is back. All right, and her mic should be opening momentarily. Are you there, Janet?
Yes, I don't know what happened.
I don't either, but okay, you're back. I said
yes.
McCarthy, but it's not McCarthy. Well, I'm trying to think of what is the gentleman's name that also was indicted. I believe his case starts next month.
Giuliani?
No. Not Giuliani. Oh, what is his name? I'm trying to pull it up. Blonde hair looking guy.
Blonde hair.
He was like his right hand man.
Are you talking
Mark
about
Meadows?
Meadows?
Yeah, Mark Meadows. Doesn't his case start? I believe his case starts next month, right?
Right. But Meadows is one that's been trying to not have to testify. He's been giving up all the information and everything, you know. Yeah, but you know, he wrote a book. He might as well testify, you know.
That's going to be interesting of what he has to say. I think that's going to be very interesting because correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that Donald Trump is going to be there. And these two are going to be in the same room, and it seems like Meadows, you know, everybody's going to try to save their own skin. There's no doubt in that. I see a secret squirrel here on the board. You know what a secret squirrel is, 111 number. Let me go ahead and open the mic and see who this is. I have a feeling I know who it is, but caller, you're on the line. Who's calling?
Well, it's not actually a secret squirrel number. It's a Skype number.
Well, we always call it stupid squirrel.
That is a rather unfortunate characterization, I would think, but you're entitled to it.
Okay. How are you doing, Sarge?
I'm doing very well. In fact, I'm doing better than ever, given the course of events and the way they're going and the secret things coming to light. I think I'm quite satisfied with the course of events, and I'm very sanguine about the future.
Okay. Interesting. So, looking at what's going on here in the political world, what do you think about these, as far as the former president being ordered to pay these fines or ordered to pay all these millions of dollars, and there's questionable if he actually has the money? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I would refer you to the Associated Press report of just a week or so ago. And by the way, they are no friend of Donald Trump. They don't like him one little bit. They did a research of similar cases of, say, I believe the amounts of over $1 million in fines of cases of civil fraud. They did a complete study for the last 90 years in New York State. And they could not find one single case where any fine whatsoever was imposed, when there was no discernible, identifiable victim who suffered damages, not one. And they never saw, even adjusted for inflation, they never saw any judgment comparable to this one. This is unprecedented, singly, and we know what it is. Kathy Hochul let the cat out of the bag when she said, oh, businesses, you don't have to flee our state. You don't have to worry about anything. This was just about Donald Trump and his outrageous conduct. See, they're not supposed to let that. They're not supposed to say that out loud. But apparently, so many businessmen are concerned about this arbitrary and capricious application of a law, which was never intended to apply to financial institutions. It was intended to protect the consumer against the financial institution. She inverted it and decided to make the consumer, the financial institution, the victim, when they didn't even make a complaint. And in fact, the representative of Deutsche Bank said they were extremely pleased with the relationship with Donald Trump, and they'd be happy to do business with him again. This was simply retribution, arbitrary application of the law, and nothing whatsoever to do with justice or the best interest of the state of New York, its people, or the law itself. And anybody who thinks otherwise probably is blind to the facts.
Okay. Well, you know, they say that's the first time for everything. And I'm looking at it, you know, there's the first time for everything, right?
Yeah.
So, you know,
like concentration camps in the Boer War. Yeah.
You know, but I mean, it's just the things that we're okay, but these, okay, so of course he's going to appeal. I mean, you have the right to appeal on any judgment. All right. But with all the indictments that he's and the charges that he has, you think he's going to be, in your opinion, you think he's going to be acquitted of all these charges, 91 of them?
I don't know if he will or not, because I think the system, I think our present day justice system is so utterly corrupted by Trump derangement syndrome, it's almost impossible to predict it. I simply look at the law, the facts, tradition, history, and legal precedent. And I'm going to say to you, if that holds to be true, then he ought to be. But again, given the fact that everything is so utterly corrupt and these people are so utterly Trump deranged, I have no confidence that will be the case. Now, on appeal, do I think it is more probable that that would be overturned? Yes. But as far as an initial conviction, I think in most of these jurisdictions, the best he's going to be able to hope for is either a hung jury. It's probably the best he can hope for. More likely than not, in any predominantly blue jurisdiction, he's going to be convicted. And it will have nothing whatsoever to do with the law, the facts, or the evidence.
Mm-hmm. But now, it's just like, I can't remember the young lady's name who spoke on the Senate floor, but, you know, she brought something that I really find amazing, is that when you say a corrupt system, now you're saying as a whole, Republican and Democrat, right? You're not just saying one-sided, are you? Because what I'm looking at, what we have to remember is that there's a grand jury that makes the decision whether to indict an individual. And they're not all made up of Democrats, and they're not all made up of Republicans. These are everyday citizens that follow whatever party. So, you know, that's how that goes down, correct? These are everyday citizens who look at the evidence, and they make up as a whole, or they make a decision whether this should move forward and that person be indicted. We can't forget that, can we?
No, I'm not going to forget it. I mean, if it's a duly adjudicated grand jury, properly convened and sworn, and that's what they find, that's what they find. I've seen many grand juries. Remember, I was a police officer for 23 years. I know how grand jury works. Mm-hmm. There's one side in there.
Right.
There's no adversarial proceeding. There's no cross-examination. There's simply a presentment
right.
or a presentment. Not a presentment. That's another form of grand jury proceeding. But the district attorney sends his case before the jury, says this is my probable cause evidence for why this person should be indicted. And they pretty
Correct.
Much get it all the time. It's almost automatic right. most of the time.
But when you
Just
say
it.
A corrupt system, so then are you – when you say a corrupt system, look at how it works, right? That's what I'm saying. Look at how it works. These are individuals who are called – right. These are individuals who are called in. Look at what the prosecutor is bringing forward. They go through it, and they decide whether this should go forward, right?
Okay.
But when you say a corrupt
system, we have the indictment.
Okay, when you say that, but let me just say this, and then I have another caller. I'm going to have to open up their line. But when you say a corrupt system, or are you saying just due to the Democratic Party is corrupt, or is it the system as a whole, no matter what party?
The Democratic Party and its leadership in particular is irredeemably, hopelessly and fantastically corrupt, degenerate, and literally lunatic. That's my belief system. That's my opinion. Based upon their conduct, I don't intend to change it. But back to what you were saying about the grand jury proceeding just a moment ago and about the law itself, we have an innocent person who gets indicted. Remember, they're presumed innocent until they're convicted. So we've got an innocent person who now has a presentation of an indictment against them. So now we get to see what the indictment says, okay? That means I get to read it. It's public. It's not hidden like a grand jury proceeding is. Everything is secret because there's no adversarial proceeding. And, you know, it's so one-sided that nobody wants – they don't normally release the proceedings because it tends to cast doubt on their innocence because it's so one-sided. That's why grand jury proceedings are secret. But you got an innocent person. Now we get to read the prosecution's case. See, that's the beauty of the system. That's when the beauty of the system comes in. And we get to see what they say are the evidence and the charges against the person. Not all the evidence, because they only have to give that to the defense. It's just like a summary of what they believe the person has done to warrant prosecution. I have seen hundreds of indictments in my career, and I know how to read them, even though I'm not a legally trained lawyer. I know how to read them. Many of them are cases that I've made after I arrested somebody. And I got to see what the prosecutor or the district attorney, the state's attorney, has got to prove. And then I look at what the elements of the offense of the law are, and then I see what the likelihood of that is. So it doesn't matter what anybody else says. I'm fairly reasonably intelligent. I can comprehend and read. I can read the elements of the offense of the law. I can read what the indictment says. Do they match up?
Right.
And most of the time, in the case of Donald Trump, no, they don't match up.
Okay, so hold tight. Just hold that thought. I'll have this person here holding, so I want to go ahead and open up their mic since they wave their hand. 314-677. I see that you have your hand up. Let me go ahead and open up your mic. Welcome to the show.
That case in Manhattan never had a grand jury.
First of all, who's calling?
It's Bianchi.
Who?
And that other gentleman that's on the line with you?
Yeah.
What's his name, Sarge?
Yeah.
He's outstanding. I've been knowing him for a long time. He's articulate. He's eloquent. He has a very strong history.
He's been on the show.
This great country.
We are familiar with Sarge. He's been on the show before. We're familiar with
him. Yeah, I've been knowing him for a long time. You can't find many like him, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But see, here's the thing. This prosecutor, this DA, said in her campaign rhetoric that the judge agreed with her that Donald Trump is guilty. So now what does that tell you? This was said before the trial, the bench trial. So don't that make you suspicious if something is going on? And then at the intelligence of the people that she's talking to, they can't see through that. And those people also will probably make up a trial jury, and no telling what would be consistent of the grand jury. See, a prosecutor don't have to reveal all evidence to a grand jury. That's where the terminology comes from, that they can convict, indict a ham sandwich. This is embarrassing. And not only with this prosecutor, a black female, not only with the one in Atlanta, a black female, not only the one in Baltimore, a black female, not only the one in Cook County, Illinois, a black female, not only the one in St. Louis, the first black female prosecutor who's now been kicked out. This should be embarrassing. What's going
on
with these black females?
Hold that thought for a minute. I have to step outside for a minute, but hold that thought. So let me go back to what Sarge said. A corrupt system. So basically saying the Democratic side. Now, mind you, I said this grand jury is not all Democrat, not all Republican.
But you don't know who the grand jury is.
Hold on a minute. Let me finish. And you don't know that they're all Democrats, and you don't know that they're all Republican. Or you don't know if they might be, but what I'm saying, these are people who are selected. They are not as what party, or I don't think that they say, well, we just want to make sure they're all Democrats so that, they will indict, the former president.
I doubt that.
Let me finish, and then I'm going to let my co-host speak, too. Everybody gets a turn on this topic. But the thing is, then the system is corrupt as a whole, not one-sided. Because come on now, there's some corrupt Republicans. We've seen them go to jail. We've seen some that where Republicans have asked them to please step down because you're making the party look bad. Right? Right. So you can't say that, oh, well, the system's corrupt because of just Democrats. The system is corrupt depending on who the person is and what party they represent, and that's their choice of being a corrupt individual that makes the party look bad. Janet, do you have a comment?
At this time, no, just listening.
Okay. Go ahead, sir.
Well, who do we hear? What demographic do we always hear saying that the system is corrupt? It's blacks. Especially those that live in vicinity where they can closely observe what's going on. Take the city of St. Louis. Take the Mike Brown case. Everybody said that police officer, Derek, I can't think of his last name.
Darren Wilson there, Pionki. Darren Wilson,
yeah. They wanted to claim that he was guilty. And being that he was not found guilty, that the system is corrupt. Blacks say that all the time. So when blacks are saying it, that means that we're looking at what political party? Democrats. Blacks live in heavily Democratic areas that would make those type remarks. Surely St. Louis, where it's been Democrat for over 74 years straight. Now, I'm not saying that Republicans don't have that option too, because they do. And here's another point. The nature of the grand jury is kept secret. You don't know what they are or who they not.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was saying. When you say when Sarge said the system, he said the system is corrupt, but he said he basically is saying, meaning the Democrats, that part of the system, that party is corrupt. And I disagree. I look at the system as a whole, regardless of what party you are. And you can't tell me that there's no corrupt Republicans.
Well,
you're telling me right now, oh, well, the system's corrupt because of the Democrats.
What Sarge is probably alluding to, and I can testify to that, because
okay,
the corruption that I see coming out of these areas are Democrats. In St. Louis, you just had three aldermen convicted and sent to prison for taking bribes. And and the gist of the bribes was a damn used car. They ain't even got
gumption. I've seen cases of corrupt judges who were Republican judges, and they were white. They weren't black. It's still corruption. Yes,
I'm saying,
if
you're in an area that's been Democratic for the last 74 years, who you think, what party are you going to get these corrupt politicians out of? They're going to be Democrats. I can name a whole bunch of them. And so you got the privilege. Wait a minute, I'm gonna stop. You got the privilege to say you've seen Republicans. That means that you probably live in a district that has some presence of Republicans. But when you're talking about your major cities, it just don't work that way. The fact is that it's not. They generally, usually are Democrats.
I have a question. I've been following the case with Donald Trump since the very beginning. And everybody who came up and was testifying against Trump was Republican. So there was no Democrat. It was Republicans. So is there what are you saying? Are Democrats is the ones that are trying to bring Trump down when everybody who's testifying against them has been Republican? Not Democrat. Republican.
Ma'am, can you be a little bit more specific than just saying everybody testifying against Trump is a Republican, because I know that's not true. But I'd like you to tell me specifically who those Republicans are.
All the people who have been turning evidence against Trump.
Okay,
even
who
the lawyers.
Are they by name?
Okay, the lawyers. The lawyers.
Michael Cohen,
Georgia.
The convicted perjurer? Okay.
Okay, what about the lawyer? The female lawyer.
Which
who
one?
Who's crying, testifying.
You're talking about
the
Sydney.
Lawyer who signed the paperwork saying that there was no more documents or anything at Mar-a-Lago.
Wasn't that Sidney Powell? Was that Sidney Powell?
No. Sidney Powell didn't.
The other one. The one that was blind that was crying during her statement.
Sidney Powell didn't testify. She made a plea bargain. So we don't know what she would have said.
Right. She made the
paperwork. No, the young lawyer, Michael, the one that signed the paperwork saying to the FBI that it was no more documents there and couldn't find out it was at Mar-a-Lago.
That's not a testimony against Trump. You said there were Republicans testifying against Trump. Who is that other than Michael Cohen, the convicted perjurer, who's in jail?
Well, first of all, there hasn't been any trial per se yet for somebody to testify. But you got
precisely.
A lot of the Republicans that I've been following that are testifying, going to testify
precisely.
Against them.
Now, the only thing I hear, and I think this is where you may mean, I don't mean to speak for you, but I think you mean to say is, his opponents in the Republican Party have made public statements against him. That is not testimony.
But
if you want to look at people who oppose him, there are many in the Republican Party establishment who do not like Trump and want to bring him down.
Okay, so let's try to make our comments short and sweet and give everybody a chance to respond. Okay, that's with everyone, please. We can't hear everybody at once. Granted, right? No trials have come up yet. I think the next one is in March, okay. And that's where I'm sorry, there's something that's popped up on my phone. I believe
Stormy Daniels in a hush money case.
Is that the one?
Yes, sir.
Up in March?
Alvin Bragg in the District of Manhattan, where again another conviction is almost a sure thing.
Okay. All right, so again, but as Janet was saying, no trial has come. But when they go and they speak to the lawyers and everything, these individuals, what she's saying, are saying, hey, look, well, this is what I heard. This is what I know, you know, as far as them, what they call it when they go and they have their little talk or whatever with the lawyers and everything. Pretty much putting together their evidence and this, that, and the other. A lot of plea deals are going on, just like you said, Powell. She made a plea deal. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what Janet is saying is that, hey, look, these people are turning around. They're changing their stories. They're saying, hey, look, okay, this is what I know, you know, to get their ass out of the slip. So that's
not testimony against
law.
I'm not going to rely on any testimony that's not in open court under oath and in an adversarial proceeding. Everything else, as far as I'm concerned, is hearsay. And hearsay isn't admissible in court anyway, only under certain exceptions.
Yeah, okay, but still, like I was just saying, I think what Janet is saying, or pretty much what she's saying, is that where these individuals have come forward and spoke with the lawyers and saying, okay, this is what I know and everything. Now, true enough, this is not public stuff, but apparently it's been enough information for them to keep moving forward, and these individuals are going to have to testify. On behalf of the prosecution.
Wait a minute, Michael. You mean like the information that Joe Biden had classified documents when he was a senator with no authority whatsoever, removing for whatever skip or whatever method he came into the being, and the special prosecutor says he did everything willfully that normally would warrant a charge, but he's an old befuddled man who's not fit to stand trial, but yet somehow is fit to be president of the chief executive officer of the federal branch of the United States government. This is astounding. That's not enough information to keep going.
Here's the difference.
Okay. Yeah, the system
difference.
Is straight up.
Here's
the
difference. The
system is straight up.
Here's the, hold on a minute. Here's the difference. I'm pretty sure there's been more than one president that probably had classified documents. There probably is. But the difference is this. When they come to you and they say, hey, we got to have those back. We got to have them back. You need to give them back. Donald Trump didn't do that, though. He didn't give them back.
Let me ask you this, Michael. And by the way, I ain't black.
To give them back.
Let me ask you this, Michael. And I'm not black. You know why? You know why I'm not black? Because I didn't vote for Joe Biden. On the other hand, I don't know how y'all do, was in my voice, my dialect, but on the other hand, when the FBI was searching his Mar-a-Lago, who else was there? So how we know they didn't plant something? Black shoes, I've heard black shoes that same claim.
Here we go with the conspiracy theory now.
Didn't Marion Barry use the claim? And he was a damn good Barry, even though he was a crack addict, by the way.
Hey, Bring It Boy, how you doing? We got Bring It Boy in the chat room. Bring It Boy says, hello, Janet. Okay, but that's a conspiracy theory now. Come on. That they planted it on him. Okay, and then they went back and planted more the second time? Or did they plant
Look, they blocked out the cameras, which the ones they knew was there, and ones they didn't know, well, they'd seen some stuff. But it's been said that they do that stuff before. I don't know if you lived during the days
FBI,
of COINTELPRO. I did.
Let me get this right. Let me get this right now. You're telling me the FBI went to Mar-a-Lago with a bunch of boxes of documents and planted them at Mar-a-Lago, planted them.
What were they looking for? They didn't take everything.
They were looking for the documents they knew that were not that were not left at the White House. They asked for them.
Wait a minute. Hang on for a second. Let's listen to the logic of that. So they had a list of the things that they were supposed to take if they found. I wonder what was on that list. And I wonder what that list was pertaining to implementing who. Think, man.
Yes.
Okay, so
a search warrant is required to be specific and particularized as to the things to be seized. It's right there in the Fourth Amendment. I've done many search warrants, and sometimes they've been rejected because the judge said they weren't specific enough. So the FBI had to tell the judge and to get that search warrant exactly what it was they were looking for.
The archive people were complaining that one of the letters, even the one from Kim Jong-un, wasn't turned over to them. So that is one of the things they could have been looking for.
All right. Michael, let me speak to this because I think this is significant.
Hold on just a second. I'm going to bring you back in because I have to read what's in the chat room. Okay, Bring It Boy says the lawyers that consented to plea deal had plead guilty to a single charge unrelated or not directly associated to Donald Trump. Okay, so I read that. Go ahead, Sarge. One second. Hold on.
I'm not ignoring them. First of all, Joe Biden was a senator. He had zero ability or legal right or authority to have those documents in his possession ever. Donald Trump was the president of the United States with plenary authority to classify and declassify any document held by the federal branch, the executive branch of the United States government. Any. He also had the authority to declassify it for whatever reason he saw fit. And he also had on his side, and this is what everyone keeps ignoring, the Presidential Records Act, which is a civil act which requires a series of negotiations between the archivist and the president for any documents that are being returned. There was a process that was in place to ensure that.
You know that.
It was short-circuited by the FBI raid on Mar-a-Lago. If Donald Trump had not complied with the judicial finding by the magistrate conducting the negotiation, then he would have been in contempt of court had he not returned them. But that was never allowed to be done. The FBI short-circuited that process with their raid.
Hold tight. Now, I listened to what you just said. Donald Trump did not declassify those documents. In fact, as you said, as far as the archives go, while he was president, he did not declassify those documents. He did not communicate with the archives regarding those documents. Apparently not, because they wouldn't go looking for them.
Well, let me ask you a question. Who was it told Trump that he should put them in a room under lock and key? The mailman?
I don't know who told him
FBI, because they were out where anybody could see them. And
this
they
was
were
way before the FBI,
documents.
Ma'am.
Well,
this way
the
before the FBI.
For a year and a half was trying to get documents from Trump, and he was not giving them up.
And how about the fact that here he is with people and he's reading portions?
He was probably reading what was not redacted. Reading that which is not redacted, is that all right?
But do we have proof of that?
Well, you don't neither.
That was redacted? Do we have proof that those were redacted?
Did the FBI check in with the territorial sheriff before they go running up on Donald Trump's property? Federal government, FBI don't have no authority to come running in, knocking on your door without checking in with the territorial sheriff.
Hello? You got to get ready for the other half of the show.
I'm sorry, what did you say, Janet?
I said we got to wrap up
in a minute on this, because we do have some guests that's coming on in the second half of
the
show.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. I am wrapped up. Maybe I look out for, maybe Sarge, maybe he follow you and pre-warn me of a conversation, a topic that you have. Maybe I might attend. I don't know. But anyway, Sarge, I see you tonight on our regular scheduled show with the people in Michigan. Talk to you later.
Okay.
Y'all have a good one. All right. Okay. So let's see here. You know, this is going to be really interesting when these cases really start hitting. It's really going to be interesting when we see what's happening, because there's going to be so many people saying, they're all lies. They're all lies. And here you got people. And like you said, Janet, there's people. What I didn't like is just the fact of saying
that. Well, I looked at the January 6th commission. There was no Democrats sitting there during those hearings at the January 6th commission. That when those Proud Boys and different people that attacked the Capitol, when they were having a trial, some of them said they wish they hadn't never done it. But it wasn't no Democrat versus Republican, you know. So all this is because it's a Democrat conspiracy. Everybody out to get Trump. I just don't think that's true.
And you know what? And as we get ready for our second half of the show, what I found interesting is what I read an article regarding Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump said that he don't think that he and Mitch will work together if he's elected again. Will work together very well. And Mitch McConnell, you know, he gave a pretty scathing remark after January 6th regarding the situation, and pretty much said that Donald Trump was to blame for it.
That's why Trump don't want to work with him after.
Right. He's a Republican. Yeah. You know, so, you know, it's just, I just didn't like the fact that it's just saying that, you know, the corruptness
is all Democrat.
No, there's corruptness in every party. Okay, you can't just say just one. There's judges. There's corrupt lawyers. There's corrupt senators.
Amen.
Throughout history, you know, you might want to say just now, but no, there's no such thing as being corrupt just now. And this administration or this time, there's been a lot of going on. And when it spoke of Michael Cohen, well, Michael Cohen worked for the former president. Oh, a convicted. Well, look who he worked for. He didn't work for a Democrat. Or did I miss that? So that's what I find very interesting. Any more you want to, and Janet, I know that we have some other things we're going to talk about, but in fact, in New York, that story, we got a few minutes. What was the one thing that people bought a lot of during pandemic, Janet? You there? Hello? Okay, I don't hear. Okay, so you guys, let me see if I can pull this up. I was asking you a question, Janet. What was one thing that people bought a lot of during the pandemic? You recall?
What they bought a lot of?
Mm-hmm.
Are you talking about medicine or masks?
No. No, we got a few more minutes, but nope, not medicine. Okay, I'll quit keeping you on hold on that one. Toilet paper.
What is it?
Right?
Okay, Michael.
People bought a lot of toilet paper, right? Well, quickly, I want to share the story with you guys because it seems people are going to be buying a lot of toilet paper. Where is that at again? Oh yeah. Where was that at? Oh, okay. Wait a minute. I lost that story. But apparently, there's a virus that's hitting the Northeast, and it's spreading very rapidly. I think they call it the Norovirus virus, and it's called severe diarrhea. So you guys might want to take a look at that story. Be careful. If you know anybody that's coming down to visit, look out. There's this virus. It's spreading very rapidly. And they say it's pretty dangerous. People are in the hospitals. You know, can easily dehydrate. So I know that's a nasty topic to talk about, subject to talk about. But, this virus is really
One of the things I wanted to talk about before we got into this debate, I guess it's called a debate.
Yeah.
Measles is starting to be more prevalent, and especially in Florida, something that was under control up until you have a lot of people thinking that they can't and vaccinate their children, don't want to vaccinate their children, and all these old viruses and things are coming back out because of the lack of children being vaccinated. That's something serious. I mean, you know, measles, mumps, things like that, that they have, polio, those things can easily come back.
And let me run through that real quick before we take a quick music break and we bring our guest on. excuse me. The story reads, the Florida measles outbreak is expanding. On Friday, health officials in Broward County confirmed a seventh case of the virus, a child under age 5. The patient is the youngest so far to be infected in the outbreak and the first to be identified outside of Manatee Bay Elementary School in Weston near Fort Lauderdale. It's unknown what connection the youngest measles case has to the school, but the spread beyond school-age kids was expected. Cases are, quote, not going to stay contained just to that one school, not when a virus is this infectious, said Dr. David Kimberlin, co-director of the Division of Pediatric Infectious Diseases at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported that as of Friday, there have been at least 35 measles cases in 15 states in 2024, most related to international travel. In January, there were 9 measles cases in Pennsylvania, 8 of them in Philadelphia. If there are no more cases reported there as of early next week, the Philadelphia outbreak will be declared over. Late Friday, Michigan Health Department announced that it, too, had identified a measles case, its first since 2019. Okay, so we'll have to get back to that story later on. Let's take a music break, and we'll be back with our special guest that's going to be joining us. We're going to have, Ani Chi, Cal Brown, and Amber Wolfo joining us shortly. And we're going to let them tell you what it's all about. Here is 3TOB with Trading Places. You listen to TMGS, The Michael Gaye Show. We'll be right back. Atlanta, Georgia. That's 3TOB, the original band. 3TOB, by the way, you guys, these are cats that were with the original Tony, Tony, Tony. People think of Tony, Tony, Tony as just the three guys, but no, actually, Tony, Tony, Tony was like six guys, I believe, of the original group. And a lot of people don't remember or realize that. But you can go to YouTube, check out a video called Loyalty, No Royalty, tells the story as a documentary of the whole situation that happened back then. And a very interesting piece. But, yep, that is 3TOB. And now we're going to go ahead and go to our second half of the show. We have our guest calling in. And if you guys don't know, please hit the number one on your phone so I can see your hand wave and we can open up your mics and I can see who's who. And we can get into the conversation. Oh, board lit up with hands waving, hands waving, hands waving. Okay. Wow, there's a lot of them here. All right, so let me go ahead and open up some mics one by one and let everybody introduce themselves. 301-597, you're on the board. How you doing? Happy Saturday, and welcome to the show.
Hi, this is Auntie Chai, Bookstore Gallery.
Auntie Chai.
Yes.
Okay, from the Art Gallery. Okay, all right. Thank you, thank you. And let me go ahead and keep going down the list and get everybody here on the board. 516-503, and your mic is open.
Hey, good evening, Mike. It's me, Kyle Brown, with the Bookstore Gallery.
All right. All right. Okay, we got Kyle Brown here. Then we have a 770. Okay. This is in our neck of the woods. 770-757. Your mic is trying to open. There it is. Welcome. Who are we speaking with?
Hi, Michael. Good evening. This is Amber Woolfolk of Saul Tutoring.
All right, all right, all right, all right. Okay, hello. And then 678-458. And it's Penn Williams. So give me a minute here. Your mic is open.
Hello, everyone. This is Letitia from the Franchise Enterprise. How are you this evening? How's everyone?
Great, great.
Doing good. All right, all right. So we got everybody here. All the hands are up. Everybody's on the board. Letitia, how are you doing this evening? And thank you for having everyone call in and join us. Can you give our listeners a little background? Oh, I see another hand that's waving here. Hold tight a minute. Let me see if this might be someone else that was scheduled to call in. 248-242. Is that correct? Yeah, 248-242. Good evening and welcome. Your mic should be open right about now. Go ahead.
Oh, this is Michael Dorsey, also with the Franchise Enterprise.
All right, there we go. All right, how you doing, Mike?
Doing way above average, Mike.
Fantastic, fantastic. Okay, okay. Long time no talk to you. So let me go to Letitia and Michael first. Let the listeners know what Franchise Enterprise is all about, and then we want to talk to Kyle and to Auntie and also to Ms. Woolfolk about their businesses. But give us a little background on the enterprise.
Well, the Franchise Enterprise, we are a business development company. And what we are doing is helping businesses move forward with their goals in franchising and business development. We are based out of Detroit, Michigan, and I am a regional director here in Atlanta, Georgia. And we have brought our guests because we are in the middle of a cohort that we have paired with the Atlanta Black Chambers. This is a business expansion cohort. So this is what brings us here today as we begin to help these businesses grow and expand. Michael, did you want to add anything?
Oh, well, absolutely. Welcome, everyone. We are definitely excited about being on this show to spread the message that there are multiple ways to scale your business. And one of the best ways you can do it is by participating in the franchise model at creating a business system that you can sell over and over again. And unfortunately, there is a contingent of people that don't participate in this billion-dollar industry, and that would be minorities. So we are focused and strategically placed to change that narrative to give everyone access, information, and resources to be a franchisor.
Okay. All right. Now you have we have Kyle Brown and Auntie Chi of of the book gallery store on. Kyle, are you guys affiliated with the franchise enterprise at this moment?
Yes, yes, we are. We are a part of the cohort for business expansion. And like Michael said, we are also excited and happy to be on this show. Michael, thank you for having us today.
Okay. And, of course, I know that, Amber, you're also affiliated with the cohorts too, correct?
Yes, sir, I am. It's been a great experience thus far.
Okay, so first of all, how did you hear about the franchise enterprise to get started with, and can you share with us what has been the best thing, you know, starting out, you know, when you first started out? But how did you hear about them first?
I could go first. This is Mikhail at Bookstore Gallery. I found out about the business expansion cohort through being an actual member of the Atlanta Black Chamber. And also I have a mutual friend of Ms. Letitia who also recommended the program, and I was able to meet her and meet Dr. Henderson and Michael Dorsey, and they got me excited about you know, us Black folks being able to franchise our businesses.
Okay, and the same with you, Amber?
Yes, we. I actually gathered the information from, we usually have a Tuesday talk with the Atlanta Black Chambers. We jump on weekly and are given vital information to help Black businesses scale and just do better in today's economy. And so we had an opportunity to apply, and Saul Tutoring was selected as one of the businesses to participate in the cohort. And one of the things that I really appreciate from the beginning, it's been about, what, Letitia, about maybe 30 days thus far we've been in the program. The data, the information that we need to really think through for franchises to be successful. Some of the things that I may not have thought about, having someone to hold your hand and walk you through the process and be thorough, not just like a high-level overview, right? You're digging deep and you're finding out things about yourself and about your business that you may not have even considered. And so that's been the best part for me.
Okay. And not to give away everything, because, of course, you know, But I'm pretty sure that what was one of the one things that struck you that you were not doing particularly well at that moment with your business that you learned that, oh, wow, I never thought of that, as you just said, and you made that change.
My aha moment was that there were different options that I could provide to someone who wanted to invest in Saul Tutoring, and that your business has different models and opportunities, from products to services to the size of the location that you want to have in different areas, where, you know, one part of the country may not need a larger, you know, depending on where you're deciding to go, will determine how do you want to launch your business? Do you want to be a smaller location? Do you want it to have more of a boutique feel? Do you want it to only be online? You know, there were things that I just really had not thought about that I needed to take into consideration.
Okay.
This is Auntie Chai from Bookstore Gallery.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask Kyle, Auntie Chai. Okay, yeah, go right ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, one of the things that we learned is that I'm good. We're excited to be here and tell our story as well. One of the things that we learned is that we are so focused on the micro lever, the customer who comes through the door to buy a product. But when you're thinking about selling your business, there's a macro level of thinking that has to occur, because you're not selling a product. You know, we have the dabs, the CBD, all of that, but we're selling the concept of our business. And so that made us think differently about how we talk about Bookstore Gallery to a certain group or demographic.
Interesting.
Hello?
And Auntie, I'm glad that you said that. This is Amber with Saul Tutoring. It really made me think about who I wanted my demographic to be, because when you're offering tutoring services, the reason that we started our company is that we wanted it to be affordable and we wanted to close equity gaps. And it's, but it's like, okay, well, who does that mean? You know, is that specifically for children of color, or, you know, exactly do you want to just, do you only want to service areas that are predominantly African-American?
Yeah.
Or do you want to go everywhere? You know, and so I'm glad that you touched point on that, because that's still one of the things that I go back and forth about.
So I just want to iterate, Michael. So what they're describing are the steps that we're taking to begin the process. Okay, so we go through, what we've gone through right now is strategic planning. Those are the things that we go through in detail, as they spoke of, to figure out who their audience is and where they're going in their business and how they want to grow and scale, okay? Then we go through legal and compliance, which we just completed. We make sure that their trademarks are in place and all the legalities of their SOPs and things like that are in place. We go through step by step. These are the things that they're describing as we go through and handhold these our clients. So the next step that we're going to go into is operations. That's where we're starting in March. And then there's marketing and training. So these are the things that we do step by step to create opportunities for franchisees to invest into their business. Okay. So we also help them develop so that we can take this to a national and international stage as well. So these are just some details that they're going to be going through in the program in the following month up until graduation in May.
Okay. Let me see if my co-host Janet Davis. Janet, do you have any questions or comments?
Well, right now, just a comment. I'm just amazed that there's you're out there to help the customer be able to expand the business, and, you know, because a lot of times businesses easily get, you know, set themselves up for failure because they don't really know which way to go. So I think this is awesome that you provide that information and help to the customer. Not the customers, I'm sorry, the owners of the businesses.
Right. So right now with your businesses, let's say, okay, so like the with the tutoring, is this basically an online tutoring that you're doing at the moment, or do you have a location, like, you know, for a person to come to, or is it just online?
So we actually have locations. We have one space that is a co-share space. It is in an athletic gym down in South Metro Atlanta. It's a training facility for student athletes, and so we make it easy for students to come in, get their work done, and then go on to their athletic training and speed and agility training. And then we have a location in North Metro Atlanta in Roswell, where there is a study room and a facility where students can gain access to technology and computers and internet, printers, anything that they need to do to get the work done.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
We do also offer services online, but we have locations. It's about 50-50.
Okay. All right. And Auntie and Kyle, what about yourselves? Online or a location store also?
Hey, Michael. We do have a location. It's located in Castleberry Hill. We're right next door to the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. We're open every single day, 7 days a week, Monday through Thursday, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. A lot of folks come in and work remotely in our space. We do have a T-bar. with Auntie. She is the master gardener. She creates all the blends that she can talk to.
Wow. Right. And
this,
you would love it. You would actually love it. It's so popular, in fact, that we're opening a new location. And so this particular training, learning how to scale, couldn't have happened at a better time for us.
Okay. So let me get this right now. So both of you are located in the Atlanta area, correct?
Yes.
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 Okay. Great. So then it wouldn't be hard for me to come visit since I'm here too. Wow, that's fantastic. Let's see. Michael Dorsey. Are you there?
I am here, sir.
Okay.
Yes. Listen intently.
Okay, so I appreciate these individuals being on. How many people would you say you guys have as cohorts at this moment?
Right now, the cohort number, it started off at 5. Then, of course, there's been, I think, some issues with matriculation. But we have a good four businesses involved in this first cohort. And we're excited about those four persons because they're setting the stage and precedent for the next group that's going to just set this world on fire.
Okay.
So just to answer his question, Michael, the businesses that we have are JB's Tenders. That is another one of our cohort members.
I'm going to pray for that lady. I'm going to put her in my prayer.
I'm hearing somebody. Go ahead. I heard somebody else speaking in the background, so someone said they're going to pray for that lady. I don't But go ahead. You respond.
Okay. So, yes, JB's Tenders. They're also a family-owned business that they're part of the cohort right now. So I just want to also add that we're thankful for the Atlanta Black Chambers for help putting this together and bringing all the black businesses together. We want to help black business dominate. That is our goal.
Right.
We want to help them come together, okay, we have to come together. We have to set the trends for our community, for our young people to come up in order for businesses to sustain in our communities. Many businesses go by the wayside because there's no one to carry on the name and the business because they do not understand how to run the business. So we want to get this cohort out to as many black business owners as we can. That is our goal. That's statewide. That's from here to California to Michigan. We even have international, okay, and European connections. Our office is in London in the UK, okay? We have connections in Africa. We have connections in the Caribbean. We have connections anywhere in the world that can take your business to the next level, wherever you want to go. We have regional directors all over the country. We have California. We have Texas. We have Chicago. We have Florida, and I do believe we have South Carolina. Okay, we have connections all over the country. We need to set the narrative for our next generation to make these businesses become available and franchise. There's no black franchises right now that are worldwide. Maybe statewide, maybe local, but not worldwide.
You know, it's interesting that you said that because we had a guest on, a young lady out of Birmingham, Alabama. She had her own, she had a Royal Tea, and she managed to get her product into two of the Piggly Wiggly stores over there. You guys heard of Piggly Wiggly, I'm sure. It used to be here. But she managed to get her product in the store, but unfortunately, she had announced about maybe 2 months ago that she had to shut down her business. I wish she had had a chance to to contact you guys. But I'm still going to give her the information. But
yes, of course.
And she said the issue for her was that she would do her tea, at home. She absolutely would, but she just couldn't meet the supply and demand. And she said, and to make the product cost, it became costly for home. So you would actually assist on that, because one thing she didn't want to do, she said, she wanted to try to find out how she can get it more mass produced. But she was afraid of taking that step with one company, because she was afraid that it would not be the same product. You follow what I mean? That it just wouldn't be.
Okay.
That
so here's
was her
the thing
fear.
With that. Here's the thing. In business, there are people that need startups, okay? So that's why we have a business boot camp to begin the process. There's three phases. There's boot camp, there's cohort, and then there's franchise. Those are the three steps. The boot camp is the basic, will help you understand, get in touch with people to answer these questions to get you going. Because I hear a lot of that fear of people, like not knowing where to begin and how to begin if they're not on the level as Kyle and Amber and JB's. They already have systems in place, but they need to go to the next level to grow and scale. So there's different phases of growing and scaling. So when a business begins, you don't know off the rip how to run this business. You have to learn what systems make your business function properly. So that's why we have a boot camp. So we're going to continue this, okay? We have the boot camp that you can sign up, and then we have the spring cohort coming up that they can sign. They can go to www.defranchiseenterprise.com to sign up for the future business cohort. And that's anyone that may be interested in beginning. They can sign up and leave us an email, a message, so that we can further assist them, the growth of their company. So, we also have summer and fall as well. So if anybody who needs the development, who needs the training and help, we can help them at any level. Anybody else, Michael, who you know in this position who needs development, they can call us and let us know how to begin, where to begin. That's what this is all about. We're really focused in the black community with the black dollar, because that's how I grew up, Michael. So I'm really passionate about this. I grew up in a community where we all survive and function off the black dollar, everyone. I'm from Detroit, Michigan. What up, though?
Okay. Well, actually, I'm from California. My older brothers and sisters were born in Detroit, but we all moved to California. I was impressed with what Kyle said about 7 days a week, that you're open 7 days a week. Have you always been open 7 days a week, or was it where you said, you started out just a few days? Because now I know some businesses that that limit their their hours, right? But did you start out being 7 days, or did you expand and say, hey, look, we can do this 7 days?
Michael, we've been open 7 days a week since we started, man. We really are a community center here in Castleberry Hills, 461 Nelson Street. We do all different type of programming on a daily basis. I mean, we service veterans. We service elderly folks. We service young folks. We're right in Castleberry by the AUC Center. We do everything from jazz music, puff and paints. We do educational series, just helping our people understand all the benefits with different botanicals such as cannabis and CBD. So we're open every day. We're constantly working with the community, giving them what they need and what they're asking for when it comes to learning other ways to deal with you know, anxiety and depression, and just providing more therapy for our community.
That's fantastic. That's definitely needed. Fantastic. Janet, we have to go down there and visit. Well, we have to go both
yeah.
and see. You have to definitely come and
yeah.
see. And
definitely.
We might wind up doing a broadcast from their location. You never know. So,
yeah, we welcome it. We do all type of podcasting here. We do private birthday parties, anniversary events. We're a whole event space and community center. And like I said, we're here. Mm-hmm. And on Fridays and Saturdays, we're open from 10 a.m. to midnight.
Wow.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Okay. That is, definitely. Jen,
please follow us on Instagram.
Yeah.
On Instagram, our Instagram is bookstoregallery_ATL. Again, it's bookstoregallery_ATL. Our website is just bookstoregallery.com. And just like I said, come on down.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Amber, I don't know if I got your information. Can you share your information also on contacting?
Yes. So if you would like to get in contact with Saul Tutoring, you can reach us at 770-757-1363. You can also reach out on our website at solvetutoring.com. And we, community is, when we, I just wanted to piggyback off of the discussions just around being a pillar in the community and where everyone is from. One of the reasons that Solve Tutoring was so important to launch is because not oftentimes in our community are we talking about tutoring and test prep. And I did a little bit of research, and they talked essentially only 1% of students in underserved communities gains access to tutoring. And I just wanted to make sure that we change the narrative around that. Students that have access and they have support, they may come from a two-household, you know, income. They have a tradition of doing the additional learning, right? It's a part of their everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we're bringing to the community, the underserved community, the Title I school areas, the areas that are not doing so well, is to make sure that we close those equity gaps by bringing affordable solutions. And students that don't have access to technology, we found a way to partner with other organizations to make sure that they have computers, that they have access to iPads, and that they have access to MARTA cards if they need to meet in person. And so when you talk about community, we are the village.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so just, you know, the other businesses that are on this call get it. We're here because we get it. And what we need to do is make sure that we get in front of as many people that may not know that this conversation is being had, whether you're a business that wants to grow and scale or if you're a person that needs community and support. And so, you know, I just, you know, thank you for having us on today. And I look forward to everything that we're going to do next.
So I just want to add on to Amber. In her business, she spoke really highly of community. So she's going into the schools. She's hand-holding. She's walking into these schools and talking to these administrators about how we educate our children, especially mm-hmm. in the athletic field, okay? We have to nurture our children as they begin this journey, more so as athletes. We want to nurture them as athletes, but we also want to nurture their education. So Amber's goals and her school, It has such a great structure because it brings the whole education community together. She works with college students. She gives them an opportunity to work and jobs as an intern. Am I correct, Amber, with intern?
Yes.
Okay.
And so they're paid. Paid and unpaid. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
We have paid and unpaid opportunities. If there are students that need to gain access to volunteer hours to improve the improve their college entrance application, right? Some colleges and universities require 100 to 200 hours. We want to make sure that they can make that college application look as beautiful as it possibly can. But for those students that want to work and gain income, we hire students that live within 5 to 10 miles from the tutoring center that we're working with. We've also we have three big partners right now. One of the larger counties in Metro Atlanta are partnering with us around the Department of Juvenile Justice. We're working with about 35 students right now that are aging out. And to age out means that you're older than you should be for the current grade that you're in, and now you have to take the GED. Or if you don't graduate this year, you're going to age out. And so we're working with this code. We've created a couple of different opportunities for students to do either reading and comprehension, math, or GED on a weekly basis. And so we work with them Sunday through Thursday and on Friday and Saturday by appointment only. So I guess I could piggyback and say we may look like a 7-day-a-week opportunity, but not as firm as our sister cohort and brother cohort members. But we also have a really exciting opportunity kicking off in the middle of March. The dates have been softly confirmed, but we'll be taking test prep into the Rice Center, the H.J. Russell Center downtown. It's close. It's really close to Castleberry Hills. I think it's actually in it. Is it?
Yep, it's in Castleberry.
I figured it was. But as I build relationships in Atlanta, I need to learn more and more about the territory, because we also have opportunity to have test prep at Pittsburgh Yards, which is another like co-working space for professionals, but it sits in the middle of underserved Atlanta community, where if we take that to students that aren't thinking about it, light bulbs will start popping up over their heads and they'll have aha moments and they'll realize what they don't know. And once you know what you don't know, now we can start working on things. And so, you know, we have a lot of great partnerships with the Chamber, some business organizations, and then we have a nonprofit arm of our company that businesses can give to make sure that no students are turned away. So about a year into business, we were founded in 2017. By 2018, I realized that almost 75% of the students that we worked with, the household was like living check to check, and they might be right at the poverty level. And we realized that we didn't want to turn any students away. And so I said, okay, well, I don't want to be a full nonprofit, but let me create an entity that can help pay for services when students don't have access. And I founded the Solve Cares Foundation. And so through golf tournaments and, you know, galas and fundraising efforts throughout the year, we're able to help fund about 20% of the students that come through the program that don't have access to the funding that they need. And that's so great. That is very rewarding.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but, well, first of all, I want to make sure I'm right. The Atlanta Chamber of Commerce, isn't that building right there at Centennial Park? Am I right?
Which one?
There's a building right there at Centennial Park, right there, just across from CNN. Isn't that their building? There's a building. You know Centennial Park. There's a building that sits right there, and it's right across from CNN. I thought that was the Atlanta Chamber of Commerce building. But anyway, how many – well, and also I want to ask, how many students would you say that you guys work with at this moment, or better yet, when you first started, and how many you have now, if you can
– When we first started, I had 2 students. They were my children.
Okay.
I had two students. And But no, seriously, it started at home, and it branched out. So we started we started with them, and then it branched out. Their friends and other players found out that we were doing tutoring around math and reading and Spanish, and so. within maybe 3 months, we outgrew one room that we were working in and ended up getting our own building. About 6 months after that, we opened another location in Riverdale. We scaled really quickly, and we went from 2 students to almost servicing 78.
Oh,
within
wow.
A year.
That's impressive.
And during the pandemic.
Amber, if you don't mind, I just want you to add this. With that being said, the fact that you opened and, you know, those different locations, who would be the best person that would invest into your company, the best type of franchisee that you're looking for? Who are you looking for to come into your community?
My ideal tutor, the ideal person to take a franchise on for Solve Tutoring would be someone who has a servant leader spirit, who is not transactional, but is transparent and is looking to transform that community. They are grounded and rooted in the efforts that they have behind making sure that the and parents in the schools are successful. We come in as like a liaison and a support. We're not there to dictate how teachers or leaders in the should or should not be doing something, right? We just try to meet the student where they are, and we're open-minded. I don't think that someone who can come in and they want to take the political educational side and pile it up on parents is a good fit. But the best fit would be someone, maybe a teacher that their heart was in it and they may have left education, or they wanted to make more impact and have a heavier hand in how things were going. Maybe I won't say that, you know, I can't say that it's a retired teacher or not teacher, right? It just has to be someone who cares about students, that has a clean background, that is forward thinking and progressive, and that is open to different teaching styles, because when we work with students, there's no one size fits all. We don't shove worksheets at you. We do a lot of book and board work. We want to get kids out of the technology. I mean, we use technology as needed, but it's not something that I want the students to depend on, because if you ask your child right now to do some multiplication, they're not going to be able to do it. If you ask them to read out loud, they're not going to know all the words. And I've seen it everything from kindergarten to college. Pronunciation, enunciation, making sure that you can do mental math, close your eyes and see the word, you know, visualize it and spell it. Students do not know how to read out loud and spell. We also teach print and cursive. I'm tired of working with student athletes who gain access to the bag and we go to sign-in day and they're printing their name. That is a problem for me. You can't sign a check. You can't sign a document. You sign a contract. You print in your name. And so I tell students,
I'm sorry. You want to get Kyle? I'm sorry, Amber. I want to get Kyle. So awesome. Awesome information, Kyle. I love it. I'm sorry, Amber. Yes. I love it, Amber. She's great. But, Kyle, I want to give you a chance, too, to shine your light as well and bring in the same information, same question. Who would you feel your ideal franchisee?
Ideal franchisee, Auntie, you can help me out. I think we definitely want a family-orientated set of folks who are looking to come in and really learn as much as they can when it comes to cannabis and regulations and getting involved with, you know, their different local representatives to really push the agenda on making sure, you know, we provide safe access to individuals in all communities. And we really educate individuals on what they're consuming, right? Anything you put in your body, you should know where it's coming from. You should know how it was grown. Was it grown in organic soil and all those different things? You should be able to talk to it, not just go into, the shop for a transaction. We really want to educate our people. We want to make sure black and brown folks have a seat at the table when it comes to selling cannabis and other botanicals in a successful way. And we want to do it our way, right? Therapy looks so different, right? Whether it's listening to music, being able to create on different canvases, or just having group discussions. We do a men's mental health meetup as well as a women's Happy Hour Healing, where we have sisters, brothers and sisters come in here just to have open dialogue.
Kyle,
and really
talk more about that. Not to interrupt you, but Kyle, talk about that, the men's part. That's very awesome, that program that you guys, men's,
yeah, so,
the mentor me.
We have the Men's Mental Health Meetup, which is hosted by Undugal, the first and third Tuesday of every single month. And it's typically from 6 to 9 p.m. And we're busting at the seams. That's why we're excited to open our second location on Edgewood. It'll be 488 Edgewood, right around the corner from Martin Luther King Center and next door to Slutty Vegan. It's a bigger space just so we can accommodate these meetups for both men and women. And like I said, we're averaging about 50 brothers in our space right now. We're always welcoming more brothers and sisters to come to our space and participate in our different activities.
Right. And so to add to the idea of who would be the perfect franchisee group or family, it would have to be, people always talk about the vibe, the ambiance when they come into our shop. It's very chill. There's art on the walls. So someone who understands that community and healing for communities of color looks and feels a certain way. We want to take the elements of bookstore gallery, those words together are intentional, and replicate that. So someone has to see the importance and what goes into establishing a safe, comfortable vibe for communities of color, quite honestly.
And have to be all about customer service, right? That's certain something that we're working on changing the narrative of black businesses is making sure we provide great customer service.
Exactly.
I'm so glad you said that about customer service, because I definitely feel like black businesses get a bad rap. And that is why it's so important for us to be relational, not transactional. They keep coming back to your location because of you and the service that you provide and how you're providing it.
Correct.
Exactly. I know that's why we've been successful, because we don't even use any ads, and everything that we've done is through word of mouth and social media.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, I'm glad you said that, because unfortunately you can go into almost any business now and it's like, well, wow, where is the customer service here? They act, some folks look at you like, oh, here they come, you know, what they want. Well, I want to buy something, or I want, you know, but you act like, you know, I'm not even wanting here. But yeah, that is a key thing. And you find that folks, I found this in some businesses with the customer service and the good practice of doing so. People will come back, like you said. They will return. They trust your knowledge. They trust your opinions. They trust, you know, what you have to offer. Some folks just will not return to a business due to the way they're treated, or just the vibe, as Auntie C was saying, just the vibe alone can make a person either return or not. So, yeah, that's very important. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome, 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 awesome. I'm so glad that I live here, because now I know I will be coming to visit to check this out.
Yeah.
So it sounds very interesting.
Yes, Mike,
very...
you have to check that space out. It's so nice. It's the vibe, like they said, is wonderful. The art on the wall. The place is such a community environment, Michael, like everything in that place that reminds you of our culture, and it celebrates our culture. It really does. And Auntie, she's so awesome. She's so quiet over there. She is the mastermind behind this tea, the herbal tea. Like, we have to commend her, because she's somebody that we need to duplicate and keep around. Like, we need we need to keep her brain around, and this is a way to do it. That's why we're trying to get the information out to different families and communities that have family businesses like this, that want to keep their legacy going.
Well, that's true. We didn't say that part of it, because Kyle and I our nephew and aunt. And that's a part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay.
Legacy. Important.
Right, right. Family. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you know, it's funny because I'm just the type of person that something that I'm the only one who does, but as you guys are speaking, I'm visualizing this, you know what I mean? I'm like getting visuals of the art and everything, you know, and everything in my mind, like, oh, wow, I have to see this. So definitely looking forward to it. Janet, do you have any other questions or comments?
I'm excited about the fact that, you know, I don't remember who exactly was talking about teaching cursive, and, you know, a lot of times people don't even know how to really write, have a signature. I see it every day. I see it every day. And it's good to be able, and like you said about multiplication and stuff like that, a lot of kids, they don't even teach things that they used to teach in school. And so to have someone to be able to help students, I think that's awesome. You know, I know I personally, with my children, I made sure they didn't speak any slang language, that they knew multiplication, they knew how to write cursive, the things that nowadays people don't even think of doing. You know, I think I'm just happy that I can't wait to go come with Michael to see what's going on down in Atlanta. I really can't.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah,
you know, it's crazy that you said that too, because, you know, where I work at, there's times that, you know, some documents will come in and well, I'm sure you guys probably have come across it where you have to print and you have to sign.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You got to do both.
Yeah.
That would be bad if you work for a company and the person hands you the paperwork, they're like, I need you to sign here and print here. Well, I can print, but what do you mean by something?
Or don't even know how to print right. That's the thing, you know? I mean, it's just all over the place. I see it constantly, you know? And it's like unbelievable.
No, I was just going to ask this real quick. Especially with the tutoring and as you guys are saying, assisting and, you know, the kids with that, what kind of responses are you getting from teachers? Because as we well know, there's a lot of overcrowded classes and teachers just can't do it all. You know what I mean? Are you getting responses from teachers and basically from the community, from both of you? What are you getting from the parents and everything about what you're offering and what you have with the children and the community?
So this is Amber Woolfolk with Solve Tutoring. We are a partner of the schools. The first thing that I did when we were founded was made sure that I looked at those schools that were having major challenges. We identified that there were schools in Clayton County, DeKalb, and Fulton that were performing below where they wanted to be, and we reached out to them and said, hey, how can we help? What does it look like for us to help you? And I'm here. And so we went through the chambers to be a business partner for those schools. And those principals were receptive. If you go to solvetutoring.com, if you see the picture scrolling, it's me and the principal. It's me and the top administrators. It's me and the district, the leaders of the district, helping them close gaps. And teachers, we're a referral service now to teachers. They hand our flyers out to their classrooms.
Welcome. Awesome.
And it's mainly because we didn't come for them. We're not another entity looking to come for you, right? We're trying to figure out how can we help. Because if we help you, you look better. If the student does better, the teacher does better, which means the county does better, which means home prices go up, right? But when you're, education impacts everything.
Everything.
Sure does. Where people buy, where people sell, how much their house is worth, what businesses come there. If your schools are suffering, people don't bring their business to your community. They don't buy homes
right.
there.
That's right.
So I need to, you know, so it's a it's a legacy, you know, this is a legacy conversation for me because we want to make sure that our communities continue to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to start with education.
Uh-huh.
Thank you very much. Before we run out of time, I have like, about 5 minutes left. Let me make sure I go around the board and get everybody to share their information, their contact information once again, please. Amber, if you go ahead, and then Kyle and Auntie C.
So that's Amber Woolfolk with Saul Tutoring. I can be reached at 770-757-1363. I also can be reached at amber@saultutoring.com, which is my direct email. And our website is solvetutoring.com, and that's like solvetheequation.com.
Okay. And Kyle and Auntie C.
Yep. Yep, thanks, Michael. Bookstore Gallery, we're located at 461 Nelson Street, Southwest. We're located in Castleberry Hills, right by the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Our website is bookstoregallery.com. Our Instagram is bookstoregallery_ATL. Please go ahead and follow us because we're getting ready to open our second location in the Edgewood community. And come on in. We're open every day, 7 days a week.
All right.
Right. And Auntie is spelled A-U-N-T-E-A, emphasis on the T.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. And also, let's also find out how folks can contact Franchise Enterprise, I guess Michael or Leticia.
Yes, we could be contacted at www.thefranchiseenterprise.com. If you click on our site, you can go to join the business cohort and leave your email information and your business, and we will get the message if you are interested in any of our programs starting in spring, summer, and fall. And if you'd like to reach me in Atlanta, Georgia, or any place in the country that's listening, my email is lgambril, that's L-G-A-M-B-R-I-L, at thefranchiseenterprise.com. They may also contact me if they are interested in becoming a cohort member or they have a interest in investing in a company. Thank you.
All right. Okay, well, we're down to 3 minutes. I want to thank Michael. I want to thank Leticia from the Franchise Enterprise. I want to thank Kyle Brown, Auntie C, and also Amber Woolfolk for joining us this Saturday. Very interesting. And again, I just can't wait to come and visit you guys. Thank you so much for joining the show and sharing that great information and that knowledge of information for all the listeners. We do have some people in the chat room that's been sitting back listening. I want to thank everybody in the chat room for joining us this Saturday. Hey, keep in mind, coming up next month, we have Miss Bunny DeBarge coming to join us. She had to postpone. Unfortunately, the matriarch of DeBarge, Miss Elderline DeBarge, had passed away a couple of weeks ago, so our prayers go out to her and the family. And also, Mr. Warrior Boswell, fashion designer of the stars, will be joining us next month, too. You've been listening to TMGS, the Michael Gay Show, broadcasting live from the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. We'll see you next Saturday. Hey, you guys, thank you. God bless you, and good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.